In the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were moving the U.S. and England to deregulation and privatization, the same thing happened in the world of terror. You call it terror Reaganomics. Now, can you first explain how, like the Contras in Nicaragua, counterinsurgency was first state-sponsored as proxy wars at the end of the Cold War, and then how it evolved?
Yes, in my research, I discovered three stages of the economic development of armed organization. The first one is actually the state-sponsored terrorism. This is when the two superpowers were actually fighting war by proxy along the periphery of the sphere of influence using fully funded terror groups. So the example of the Contras is very good. Here we are that situation where the sphere of influence of the United States, being Central America, has been eroded by, you know, the election of the Sandinistas. So the U.S. decides, instead of intervening directly, decides to set up the Contras, and which will fight which. War by proxy in Central America. Now, at the same time, the Soviet Union was helping the Sandinistas and other groups, you know, to maintain their position in Central America. So that's the example of the war by proxies.
The first stage.
That's the first stage.
Yeah. Can you tell us about the other stage?
The other stage is what I define as the privatization of terrorism. That took place in the late 1970s, early 1980s. The best examples of that are the PLO in the Middle East, ETA in Spain, and the IRA in Northern Ireland. This is when armed organizations managed to find ways to self-finance themselves. And this was motivated by two factors. One was, you know, the desire to gain independence from the sponsor, who, of course, you know, were pursuing their own interests and not the interests of the armed organization. And the other, it was the increasing cost of running an armed organization. Now, Arafat was the man who masterminded the independence of the PLO from the conditioning of the various Arab states, who not only had created the PLO, but, you know, were sponsoring the PLO.
And, you know, to be a terrorist these days, you have to be a good businessman. You got to keep the dollars coming in to pay for the guns and to pay actually for the salaries of the soldiers who are fighting the war. And you mentioned Yasser Arafat as a prime example, not only as a leader of his people, so to speak, but as a terrorist and also as a good businessman.
Arafat, it is a genius. And in fact, what I discovered is that Osama bin Laden is actually following in the footsteps of Arafat. I mean, Arafat is very much the blueprint of what Osama bin Laden has been trying to do with Al-Qaeda. I mean, why did I say he's a genius? It's because, you know, he managed to create an empire out of nothing for the PLO. I mean, in my book, I describe the birth of the shell state, which is, you know, what Arafat has done with the PLO. He actually created the shell of the Palestinian state, which is the socio-economic infrastructure of a state without the core, which is the right of self-determination. Even today, the Palestinians do not have the right of self-determination, but they are a state. And this is really very, very important, because we see terror groups doing the same thing all over the world, following that sample. I mean, even in Iraq today, we're seeing Islamic groups moving in, gaining control of certain areas and establishing their own shell states.
Which in some cases is better than the status quo, because even with some terrorists in charge, at least they're providing some kind of food and some kind of economic sustenance.
Well, yes, there's a very good example in Peru with Sendero Luminoso in this region called the Selva Alta, which is a region near Machu Picchu where nothing really grows apart from coca. Now, the government has tried to, through its policy of eradication of coca production, has been trying desperately, you know, to change the crops which are planted in this region. And this, of course, process creating widespread poverty in this region. A certain sage, Sendero Luminoso, moved into the area, gained military control, and let the farmers produce the coca, but also he became the major intermediary, the sole intermediary of the sale of these coca leaves to the various narcotraffickers from Colombia. Today, the per capita income of the people living in Selva Alta is at least four times higher than the average per capita income in Peru. So, yes, from that point of view, what you said is absolutely true.
Talking with Loretta Napoleoni, she is the author of Modern Jihad, Tracing the Dollars Behind the Terror Networks. It's a look at the economics behind modern-day terror and the new economy of terror, as she calls it. I'm Paul Nelson. You say that a terror economy is similar to a war economy. And when we look at the Great Depression in the United States, it was a war economy that brought us out of that. There may have been better ways to do it, but in the case of Hitler, it seemed like a good idea to stop him. Tell us about the similarities between a terror economy and a war economy.
Well, a war economy is an economy which is based exclusively on sustenance. All the resources are pulled together in order to sustain the war, and very, very little is left for the population to basically survive. So it is not an economy that grows, it's not an economy that creates wealth, it is an economy that sustains a war effort. The same thing happened with terror groups, because what the terror groups do when they move in certain areas and gain control, they establish their own shell state by destroying the socio-economic infrastructure of the previous system, or whatever is left. I want to give you a very good example of what of this phenomenon. It is actually what's happened in Iraq recently, the attack against the UN and against the Red Cross. It is related to this strategy. The reason why they attack the Red Cross is because they do not want the population to rely on anything else apart from, the terror group. So the population is forced to draw towards the terror group, so they have, in order to survive, to be part of this organization, not only joining in, but also being part of the sustenance economy, which surrounds the terror group and the shell state created by them. At that point, what is the real aim of this shell state? It is the maintenance of the armed struggle. It is the maintenance of the war that they are waging against the various powers.
If no one's fighting them, then they don't have a reason for existence. So they have to be in a conflict.
Well, that's why Iraq is a fantastic example of what is happening, because Iraq was a country where there was no terrorism, where there was no shell state. It was a country under Saddam Hussein. It was a dictator, but it was a country that was stable. Now today, by starting a war and opening up the borders and destabilizing the country, politically speaking, we see the beginning of the formation of these shell states. Without a war, there is no shell state.